Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and all of our listeners out there. This is Jason, player of Tam West Crown off the Shield Bash podcast, welcoming you to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. This time we have Mr. Jason Lillis, and if you don't know who he is, I'm going to tell you right now, he is the inspiration for me to even start this process, and I know you didn't know that. I wanted to surprise you with it.
That is a surprise, yeah.
But about a year ago, we got a notification on Twitter that somebody was retweeting our posts that we were putting up episodes and had logged us into a listing of all the different Paizoverse APs that were being run with the RSS feed and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And without fail, you always get us. You always hit up where it's like, hey, they posted another episode. Here they are. And you put together the cool little slideshow recently. I've noticed that. That's really cool.
That's pretty fun, yeah.
And you know, we try to shout you out on our podcast. I don't imagine you actually have the time to listen to every single one of the podcasts that you are supporting because there's so many.
I wish I could live up to the myth that I do, but sadly, no, I am a stay-at-home dad, and there's only so much I can have my headphones on while my kid is doing something else to listen to other things. So, yeah, I try and give every podcast I find a few to several episode listen if I can, just to see what all there it is that they're doing and sharing about. So I got to listen to Shield Bash a while back. Very excited for the adventure that you all are running. But sadly, no, I apologize. I'm not all the way caught up yet.
Hey, yeah. I don't expect you to. I mean, I have two small children myself around the same age as yours, so I get it.
They know how it goes, like, yeah.
You can't leave them alone.
Yeah, exactly. There's that point that you hit where it's been quiet just a little too long, and you know that that's the moment to dash for them, yeah.
You stop what you're doing, you look up, and you're like, wait a minute.
What part of the house are they in? Yeah, where are they in the apartment? Yeah. Did I just hear the refrigerator door? Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
But that being said, it's one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on was because I wanted to be able to say, we really appreciate this.
You're so welcome. Yeah. You know,
it is a fantastic thing. And then, you know, we've got our outline. Today's subject, Bashers, is going to be the community. It's kind of a broad subject, so it'll be kind of a vague topic probably for a lot of it that we may start diving down some rabbit holes. But before we get too much into it, I wanted to ask you a few other questions. Sure. First off is, what motivates you to do all this? Is it just the boredom of being a stay-at-home dad, which, by the way, I am very jealous of? It is a thing that we had hoped to do before, you know, the economy kind of ruined our plans for that, and I ended up being the full-time worker in the house. But so what motivates you to spend the time to keep track? And, like, quite frankly, we didn't reach out to you. You found us. So you've got to be looking for these things.
I am, yeah. So, you know, storytelling has been just a huge part of my life throughout, as far as I can remember, right? From the first books that I got to read to getting to absorb stories through gaming in different ways. Like, that's always been something that I've been interested in. And for a long time, it was fairly passive that I got to do it. And then when Pathfinder came out back in 09 with the beta test and the 10, I guess, around there, I got to be part of that initial, like, setup and got into a gaming group. And so Pathfinder is near and dear to my heart as the game that I primarily have been playing for the last decade or so now. But then once we had our child, I kind of had to give gaming up because the time evaporated and my spouse was in a PhD program. And then when she finished her program and we started moving, I got to finding a few podcasts that were out there for Pathfinder. I'd listened to a couple of actual plays before that somewhat. Once I fully lived into being an at-home dad is when I started listening to them the most. And it was maybe a year into doing that that I actually started reaching out to and connecting with people in the actual play podcasting community, folks who are running Pathfinder and Starfinder adventures, and just found wonderfully warm individuals who were absolutely thrilled that I was listening to them at all, right? That I wasn't a family member or a personal friend, and that I had found, and that I was listening. And so I had a lot of fun connecting with them and realized, you know, there wasn't at the time someone out there who was really kind of collating all the information of all the different podcasts that exist. And while that's too much for one person to do for all of the tabletop role-playing game community, like if I tried to incorporate all the 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons podcasts out there, I'd just as soon stop before I started, because there's almost no way you could track them all down. But I realized that for Pathfinder, here are some specific names of adventures that I could go looking for, like Rise of the Rune Lords, or Serpent Skull, which you guys are doing, or Shattered Star, or Giant Slayer, of course, is a big one that's out there.
Of course.
Carrion Crown, we've got a lot of folks who are running that. So, you know, with the right search terms, I was finding quite a few folks. And I found that Twitter was the best way to get that engagement in place. And so for a little bit, I did it under my personal account for that. And then after a while, I started a new account that was primarily dedicated to following that space, and put together, of all things, just a Google spreadsheet with a whole bunch of links and names in it. And from there, I've just had a great joy. I don't know, like, why do I do this? I think a big part of it is that for me, I'm driven to create community wherever I am. And since I'm right now primarily stuck here in one place, right? Not stuck, well, right now, pandemic for few future people who are listening to this thing that came out in the past, was finding that I wasn't having a lot of in-person interaction with others or opportunities for community building, and I ended up doing a ton of that digitally. And so it was about being able to make connections between podcasts, like, hey, you're running this, let me help you connect to this person who's running this other adventure. I think you guys would get along well and get to know each other. And the community really is, it's great. It's welcoming. Their folks are reasonable with each other, and it's not a super toxic part of the internet to interact with people who are creating these shows for all of us to enjoy, because at the heart of it, we all are storytellers, and that's what we want to share with each other, with our audiences, and that's where we want to that's where we want to take it. So for me, it's just, you know, it's the primary benefit is I get to kind of be the fan in the front row who's waving and jumping up and down excited, but I get to kind of like try to be that for everybody or for as many people as I want to. And if I can't be there for every moment that happens in their stories, I like to try and make sure that enough other people are going to find the actual play podcast set in the Paizoverse that is best for them, right? Like, I don't want to just say, oh, this is the podcast that has the most downloads out of all the podcasts that are out there, because that might not be the story that they want to listen to. So when folks ask for recommendations, I try to suss out, like, what are you looking for from a story? Because if you're looking for a gothic horror campaign, well, hey, here's Carrion Crown. Let's connect you with that, right? Ready made. If you're looking for high adventure, okay, let's maybe talk about one of these other ones that's out there. So, yeah, it's just been really neat to put together a community. So that's a big part of why I do what I do. Yeah.
And it's reached quite a distance, because I've found a few podcasts for when you retweet us and things like that, we will get follows from other actual play podcasts.
Awesome.
And I have found, like, that's how I got in contact with the Dimension Door podcast.
Yeah.
And I started listening to them, and then listeners, you'll remember 2 weeks ago, James Schwartz was on here. But I've also been reaching out to a bunch of others that have followed us through the same way. Most of them aren't Paizoverse podcasts.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, there's tons of 5th edition and homebrew and just other game systems that are also tagged into what you're doing.
Yeah.
That have followed us for that reason, which
is great.
Fantastic. You know, you focused here, but it's got its creeping little tendrils going out into the rest of the world.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah.
And a lot of those other creators, they've also, like, I'm booked out until the end of March.
Oh, awesome.
For people to talk to already.
Fantastic.
And I've got a bunch of other people that are like, well, when can we do this? And I'm like, well, I'll talk to you in March, because I don't know at this point. It's yes. just too far.
Sometime soon, hopefully. Yeah.
But the other thing I want to talk about, the community, you mentioned it is a great thing.
Yeah.
Now, we here at Shield Bash, most of us are also the ones who are tied into the Farmageddon Game Convention.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I remember seeing that on your website when I first heard about y'all, and I'm realizing that despite being a Midwesterner, I don't actually know every other human that lives in the Midwest. It's a nice myth about living in the central states, but not exactly true. Yeah, but yeah.
I mean, the big thing we run into here in Illinois is if you say you're from Illinois, everybody thinks you mean Chicago. And
right.
you have to remind them there is a rest of the state. But
there's a whole lot more state. Yeah.
It was about late 2010, early 2011 when I started playing Pathfinder specifically. Mm-hmm. And I want to say it was 2013. Here in central Illinois, there is a convention called Winter War. And it has more seasons, more years than any other convention in Illinois.
Nice.
And I mean, we're talking like it's at Winter War 48, so like Gen Con is barely above.
Pretty
it.
Close, yeah.
I started going there, and I met so many people. Mm-hmm. And besides the fact that this is a pandemic year, normally within about a 50-mile radius of us, we have our convention, Farmageddon, mm-hmm. Winter War, Heroicon,
nice.
Lexicon, Flatcon,
and that's great.
D8 Summit.
Yeah. Like,
there's six conventions within 50 miles. Like
that's great.
Yeah, and it's you get to meet the people. Mm-hmm. We are probably going to end up talking to one of the organizers for Lexicon later, and sweet. You know, it's. It's the gaming community in general, it seems like, that has a certain level of, and obviously it's not everybody. Everybody's heard the stories about the toxic people and the gatekeepers, and everybody has those horror stories, but it has been my experience in a general sense that, you know, everybody's really accepting. Allison, if you ever listen to this, you're part of that. Like, you are one of the reasons why I got into this, is because she was there to help pull and, you know, nurture all of us little baby gamers who didn't really know what they were doing, and be like, okay, here you go. Let me hold your hand and walk you through what you need, and help you, you know, oh, you're starting a convention? Well, let me hold your hand for that, too. And then, like, okay, you take your first steps and go off on your own, little baby bird.
That's great.
Yeah. And it is a fantastic experience.
Yeah.
What are some of the best ways that you know mm-hmm. for people to get connected into the community?
Sure. So a big part of that really depends on where you are and what depth of social media engagement you want to have. So that's for me, because I am probably not hauling my kid to most of the game stores that are here in town, though I did before the pandemic hit. I took her once, and she didn't get dice, but she got one of these Chessex sets of little tokens that you can use for mm-hmm. like as they were probably for magic or something like that, but she loves them. She still uses them for math class.
But let's say in a non-pandemic world,
right?
Then we'll go into a pandemic.
Yeah. So one of the ways that I initially got connected with Pathfinder was playing in organized play with the Pathfinder Society. And I had a lot of fun doing that. I had a really great group that I played with that wasn't just interested in powering through the scenarios as quickly as possible, or necessarily having everyone show off the most perfect builds of characters as they did it. We had a lot of fun with the stories, and sometimes we just played way, way too long on some nights. One of the things that I like to recommend to folks is if they can, to find a way to play an organized play experience. And if they need help doing that right now, one of the great things that Paizo is doing is that they are helping connect folks digitally and remotely with each other to get organized play games going. Or you'll find a lot of the folks who run Pathfinder and Starfinder podcasts will actually host some of their own Pathfinder Society or Starfinder Society games through some of their Discord channels, the micro chat, micro social media server, I guess you'd call it, as a way of helping folks connect. And so that's a great way to do that. But
I know the Find the Path podcast does a lot of that.
Yeah, they do. They do
Discord specifically.
Yep. This past summer, I played a few of those as play by post games, and then after a while, I just said, "Well, I gotta bow out of this. It's one more thing I don't need." But yeah, I like to follow a lot of folks on Twitter. Is where I primarily engage with the community in terms of the folks who are creating games, who are like both the podcasters who are out there telling the stories, but then also the folks from Paizo themselves who are going to be the folks from Paizo as well, who are, you know, writing these games that we love and writing these adventures and being able to connect with them. One of the ways that I help folks connect with podcasts on Twitter is I have a couple of lists that are up there that folks can click through and find as a way to connect with the individual shows. And then from there, being able to connect with other people who are fans of that show just by following them or engaging with that, I like to try and put all of that together. If I had, you know, way more time and a bit more technical know-how, I'd love to build a website out someday that had this a little more nicely laid out, instead of like, oh, the spreadsheet's here, but the Twitter lists are here, and the Instagram's over there, and you can kind of follow it if you go there. But just finding ways to pull that all together. I think the biggest trick with building that community is the initial saying hello to somebody else, right? Because it's usually trying to connect with someone that you've never met before, or maybe you've only heard their voice. And it's this really strange way of creating friendships, right? Where you're saying like, well, hey, you don't really know anything about me, and I only kind of know a little bit about you, but can we talk about this thing that we both know a lot about, or if we don't know a lot about it, we at least enjoy a lot, and we can share some good vibes around that particular shared enjoyment there. So yeah, I think, that's where I have gone thus far to create community, and it's worked out so far. Yeah.
And listeners, if you're looking for your local organized play, obviously most of your friendly local gaming stores aren't going to be hosting right now. They can probably put you in contact with who is, though. You can also check Warhorn, Roll20. They both have, you know, event listings. Paizo itself, I personally play a couple play-by-posts on Paizo. If you're into other, like 5th edition, D&D.wizards.com. Or just, you know, LFG word searches. Or I almost guarantee somebody you know plays.
That's probably true at this point. Yeah.
I have had so many people over the years at my job be like, so what is Dungeons & Dragons? What? How do you... And describing it to them is very difficult. But if you have found us and are listening, then you should know what this game is.
Mm-hmm.
And you should know... have at least a basic idea of how it's played.
Yeah.
And you probably know the sort of person who plays it.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, if a web search doesn't do it for you and you don't know anybody, find a convention too. Mm-hmm. You know, a local convention to be able to, and just go ask the organizers, because I guarantee a small convention especially, those guys are going to want to get as many people involved as possible, because we run this stuff because it's our passion and we want to share that with you.
Totally.
You know, that's what the community is about, is that shared passion, because you can't play this game by yourself. It is a community experience, a social thing. Mm-hmm. And we want everybody here. And it's like Jason, the other Jason, said, one with the shiny ear headphones.
Yeah.
Jason Lillis and I had never spoken before. I'd never spoken to, you know, like I said, I've been reaching out to podcasts all over the map. I'd never spoken to any of them before, but I'm just like, hey, I love the game. Do you love the game? Do you want to talk about gaming? Because I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, just dives in. Just dives in.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And like you said, I especially liked what you were sharing there about reaching out to your smaller local conventions too, because those are the folks who already know who the, for lack of a better term, who are the good apples in the gaming community that might be open to a new player coming in and getting to experience the game. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
And they also probably just have some firsthand knowledge of like, hey, Jim's, you know, cousin just moved out and they got a space at their table.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Let's see if we can help make that connection. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
And I know with the conventions I go to, like I said, we got a lot in the area.
Mm-hmm.
I see the same, like, I see, like, hey, these 12 people, I see them at every convention. I see a bunch of other people, too, which is one of the things I love is meeting these new people.
Yeah.
There was a girl that I started seeing, a lady, I should say. We went to high school together.
Nice.
Yeah. A couple of years apart, but it was like, hey, I know you.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah.
There was another girl, I keep saying that, I apologize, another lady, who, you know, I met at a convention, and she was telling a story about how she moved to the area and tried to get into playing 5th edition, because that's what she'd played before she moved, and you know, she went to the local game store and it was a nightmare. She just had a real bad experience where, you know, the whole like, oh, you're a girl, so you can only play a girl sort of mentality. And one of the other people over at the Pathfinder table stood up and walked over and said, hey, why don't you come over here and play with us? And, you know, she, you know, a year later is running organized play at conventions.
That's awesome. Yeah.
We gained nothing but gain from that because she does a good job. She had fun. And it was all it took was not being a dick.
Yeah. It is funny to think about just the vast variety of experiences that people have when they go out to try and make that initial conversation moment with others to see, like, what would it be to step into that, into somebody else's table, into somebody else's game, even for just a drop in for a night or something like that. So yeah, it can take some extra courage. It can take a little bit of research as well to look into a space and see, or even just going and asking, hey, can I listen in for a few minutes to see if this is going to make sense to me to join? Are these, you know, are the kinds of jokes these people are telling at the table the kinds of jokes that I want to be around, you know, those kinds of things too, so that a person doesn't have to, you know, compromise who they are to participate in a hobby they want to enjoy. Let's help you find the people that are going to make those best connections. So yeah.
And that, I mean, that is one thing we try to be pretty upfront about with our podcast specifically is we don't make clean jokes. Like, we're a very adults only podcast, and for some people that's just not what they want. And you know, we make no apologies, but, you know, we also we want to make sure you're aware of it ahead of time.
Yeah.
So what you said about, you know, like topics and stuff, it can be important, you know, when you don't know what's happened in people's pasts, you got to remember, you know, that part of the community is also important, where it's like, okay, you don't know who this person is. You don't know, you know, what traumas they've dealt with in the past, you know, what may set off something in their head. Try to be, you know, that level of respect for it, which is nice.
Yeah. I have, every once in a while, I'll see somebody asking something like, what's your best advice for someone who's going to be a first-time game master, first-time dungeon master, or something like that. And I'm remembering that there were some, there are some research, relationship researchers out there. John Gottman is his name. I had to read a bunch of his stuff for a job I had several years back, and he talked about relationship advice and the two most important things in a relationship being kindness and generosity. And I cannot imagine two better terms for how to best approach what it is to run a game for a group of other individuals, where you're inviting them into this shared storytelling opportunity, where you're saying, how are we going to build this world together with each other so that we can have something that we all enjoy walking into. Not that it's never going to be perilous, or not that bad things are never going to happen to the characters that are in the story, because otherwise it would just be creating utopias, and it'd get boring pretty quickly. But we can, even though we might create perilous situations for others, or for their characters, we're not creating them for the people around the table, right? We're creating a space where they feel safe to tell a story with us. So, yeah, that's absolutely what we can and should be doing for people who want to come join us in this game. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And listeners, we will get deeper into the social contract, as it were, on probably a later episode. Well, definitely a later episode, because it is a thing that I really agree with, and but you'll notice that undertone that came up in the last one too, that communication is important. That being said, let's then move into the during pandemic connections.
Sure. Yeah.
Obviously, you know, we've mentioned you run a Twitter account, which is fantastic. It finds you a lot of people.
Yeah.
But how do you find is the best way to play a game when you can't sit down with somebody?
Sure. Yeah. So all of my games right now currently use the Roll20 virtual tabletop as how I connect with the players in my game, and the game that I'm playing in. It's one of many virtual tabletop options that are out there. It's the one I started using about a decade ago when I was initially researching some of these things, so it was not a difficult one for me to keep up with how to use, and I think it's continued to get better, though I know that there's also Foundry virtual tabletop is out there, Astral is another, and there are so many that are out right now, and even more that are going to continue coming out. So I am really excited for how the pandemic is going to really ramp up what's possible for people like me. Like, so when I finally got back to playing after my kid was born, it was only virtually, because there was the way my spouse's schedule was working. There was no way I was going to be able to say, like, okay, honey, thanks for the night off. I'll be back in 6 or 7 hours once I finish, once I get to the store, get everything set up, do this whole session with my friends, and then come back. This way I, you know, just had to make sure my kid was falling asleep at bedtime, or at least close enough to it. And then I just went and got to set up on the remote game. So for me, playing remotely is something I've been doing for a few years now, and it feels pretty easy to me. One of the big things to get set up is figuring out how you're going to do voice chat with each other. If you're going to use something like Skype so you can see each other's faces, that's awesome. If you're not, you can use Discord is a free service that's out there where you can create your own server just for that game. And one of the things I really like about that is that you're not only creating a voice channel for each other to talk to, but you can also create text channels, individual journals for each of the characters, each of the players, so they can track some of their own data in that space. Shared chat that operates outside of the actual game session, so that if there are some downtime things you want to be doing that aren't necessarily quote-unquote the most exciting stuff, like shopping if you don't want a shopping episode of your show for whatever reason, or not show, I guess, session, gaming session, right? But yeah, how do we help folks make sure that they've got...
With the people that you play with, did you already know all of them?
Actually, no, I didn't. I was on a Discord server for another actual play podcast, and it was right when the Pathfinder playtest for second edition was coming out. It was late summer of 2018, and I knew it was coming out, and as soon as it arrived, I reached out on that server and said, hey, I would love to run some of this adventure, so I can't, like, we're going to be looking at having to look up rules. we're going to have to, you know, dive into a bunch of different things. I'm going to have to trust that you've looked up stuff for your character, but let me try and run this for us. And so I had five or six individuals write back that they were interested in playing. And so we got through the first scenario and it went all right. And then we were going to go to the second scenario for the play test, and a couple folks dropped. We picked up a couple others. And then we got to the third scenario, and by then we had a group that was like, okay, I think we can keep going with this. Nobody dropped off then for the fourth scenario, or the fifth, or the sixth, or the seventh. So by then we realized, okay, by then we realized that if we were still all interested and willing to play together by that point, we actually probably had a pretty good crew together. So yeah, so that was all folks. There are some of those folks I've still never seen their faces because we've only played voice chat. I think they've seen my face. I'm not sure. I've met one of them in real life at just by happening to both be at the same gaming thing that was happening. But otherwise, yeah, it's been an entirely online and audio only experience with these folks. Yeah.
If you did, for whatever reason, happen to lose one of your players, how do you think you would go about finding a replacement player?
That's a great question. So right now our table's kind of big, to be honest. So I'm also running Serpent Skull, but I'm converting it to second edition. So it's a little bit of an experiment there as well. But I have six players at the table right now. And it's,
as do we.
Yeah, it's a full table. It's tricky. I think I love them all, and I can't imagine having any of those players decide that they were done with the game and stepping out. Though it's happened with our with another table I'm at, where person just said, "Look, I've got too much going on right now. I can't carry on with this." And so we went from six players to five players and the GM. So
your recommendation is just start with enough that if you lose somebody, you don't have to find somebody else.
You don't necessarily need to. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that also gets at the heart of like, what's my role as a GM if I'm in charge of the game? It's not to say, well, here's what the adventure says, so obviously we have to encounter this many constrictor snakes in the next 5 minutes, or otherwise the entire adventure path falls apart, right? Like, you know, you do what you can. It's my job to make the adventure interesting for the characters that are currently in the story and currently committed to the story. And it's not my job to say, oh, well, it's on you guys to have a rogue to be able to do these things. It's not on me to, you know, adapt this adventure to, you know, just make it challenging in a different way for you. So thankfully, you know, with six players, you've got pretty much every base of the game covered by that point. And if they were to drop a couple of folks, what I would want to do as the GM for that is to look at the adventure and evaluate, okay, what is something that's coming up in this game that they're simply not going to be able to succeed at, like have no chance of succeeding at? And those things no longer need to be part of that adventure, in my mind. I would simply take them out. If we were to have players step away and then maybe later we decided we wanted to reach out and have somebody else come in, awesome. We would do it, I bet, because we all know more people who would probably be interested in playing if we asked them. So it wouldn't be hard. I don't think it would be hard, but that's also who we are and the kind of communities that we create and that we're part of. Yeah,
that is largely how I have found a lot of the people I play with. Is I meet somebody and they're like, you know, they're interested, but then if we need somebody else, they're like, I know somebody I think that would be interested. And, you know, I joke with my wife that it was our first date was a D&D game.
Nice.
And through her, I got her brother playing. For a short time, got her other brother playing.
Yeah.
Through the first brother, I got his best friend playing. And now his, you know, that friend's wife plays.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just like collect everybody in. And she's like, come on, it's warm in here. we're friendly, and we have snacks. Come play with us.
Yeah. Let's tell a story together. Absolutely.
My wife is off camera laughing at me now, by the way, just to let you know. And that's I'm going to point out the parallels of our lives. You mentioned that your wife is going through a PhD program when you had your first kid, and it changed everything. Same.
Similar. Yeah, similar experience. Almost
the same. She was going through a PhD program when we had our first kid, and, you know, it changed a lot of our lives. Yeah. So, but that being said, so you got started on Discord. You moved into Roll20. We are, with our podcast, we're still meeting in person with one of our games. One of the guys we play with, he's a surgeon, so he can't risk anything.
Yeah.
So we've done a mix of Facebook Messenger video calls, and, you know, so sometimes you see the face, sometimes you don't, depending on the camera.
Sure.
And I personally, when I was running, Shattered Star, book one, and I was using Google Drawing for the maps and the tokens and putting everything on there. All that's completely free. The Discord, completely free. Skype, free. Roll20 is free. We do a thing where we trade off DMs. When we run APs, it's book by book. So one of the other guys is taking over. He's going to run Roll20. He is paid and gotten all the maps and stuff. You know, all the fancy pre-built, doesn't have to do as much work. Fantastic, but for him, still free for me. And we find ourselves in a similar situation where we were down to four people. Nobody's work schedule changed, they couldn't meet. And so we had to kind of reach out and find somebody, and it was like, wait, I know this person. And they play.
Are you interested?
Give us a hug. I realize now saying it that way, it sounds kind of creepy. It was a very polite way of saying, like, hey, you know, I've gamed with you before at conventions. You do a good job. Do you want to do this? It's virtual, so it's easy.
Yeah. Can you participate in this where you are with a low barrier for entry?
And for those of you with kids, like the two Jasons here, you know, my kids are 4 and 6, and when we game, we have to pause, so I can get my kids dinner and put them to bed. And, you know, everybody knows that one of the other guys, he's got two kids, and they're even younger than mine. So we all just kind of have a similar, like, okay, this is the time where we break and everybody goes to grab some food. This is the time where we break and, you know, go do whatever while the parents put their kids to bed.
It's a fun thing to figure all that out. Like, one of our players got a new job a couple of months ago, and so but it's funny, we're spread out across the entire country. I'm on the East Coast, this person's on the West Coast, and we were already like pushing our start time to being about 8:30 Eastern time, and she was like, I might not be able to start making it until about 9, and I was like, okay. So My gaming nights are like 9 to midnight for me, and it gets pretty late some nights, but they're great. It's just it's interesting. Like, it was a lot easier when I lived in Central Time Zone to keep up with everybody to make that work. But yeah, you got to roll with it, right? Like, if you want to tell the games, the stories that you want to be a part of, got to roll with it. So
I've seen a lot of people bow out because they don't have the time to play, but for me it's like I make the time because this is like my favorite thing. It's the reason why I've got two home groups and a podcast, and now I'm doing this thing, and we run a convention, and I like to go to the other conventions, and it's just I love it all.
Totally.
You know, and I have no problems giving support to Paizo because they just seem like. My story for Paizo was 2013 Gen Con, right? I'm standing in line at the Paizo booth in the exhibition hall, and the line is, like, I'm in that line for like an hour.
Wild. Right? Yeah.
I met and talked to Neil Spicer.
He's just standing
there. I'm talking to the couple behind me. They're from Denver.
Yep.
While we're standing there, this lady comes out of the big makeshift cardboard, you know, booth that they got. She's whistling and... racking, putting things on the racks and stuff, and I just looked at him. I'm like, is that Lisa Stevens?
Yep.
Stocking shelves? And it was. I got to talk to Lisa Stevens.
Yeah.
I doubt she remembers me, but I remember talking to the CEO of Paizo as she was stocking shelves in the middle of JedCon.
Yep.
Like
all hands on deck. Yeah.
Yeah. I will admit, you know, we understand that we do not run the sort of podcast that they would probably ever promote because, you know, reasons, but you know, they seem just like good, solid people, and they make a damn fine product, quite frankly.
They do. And you can say that, but I will say I have had, I have seen some great things from their social media manager currently, who is interested in helping make sure that as much of the Paizoverse stuff that's out there and getting created. Obviously, they're going to put some primary marketing oomphs behind their partners who are creating stuff in the space, who have a licensed relationship business agreement with them. But at the same time, they recognize that there are a lot of people who are out there who are just doing this for fun, doing it because they love the game and doing it because they love sharing that with others. And they're not going to shut everybody out of that. So they're great folks who are very kind to look at some of the stuff I've created on Twitter for followers and for sharing about shows and things like that, and be able to help share some of that information as it comes up. So yeah, it's neat stuff. It's neat to see. I'm curious to see how the community is going to continue growing in the coming year, because I think once we step out of pandemic mode, hopefully for a long, long time, we can see a lot of folks just, you know, bursting with creativity and with the kinds of stuff that they're going to create with the systems going forward. So
obviously on the Paizo end, there's Glass Cannon. Like anybody who listens to a bunch of Paizo stuff, you've heard Glass Cannon and you know, Androids and Aliens, and then Paizo has their own, the one that Eric Mona runs. I can't remember. They've got their own, like, podcast, video.
Band of Brothers, or Band of Bravos, I should say, is the one Jason Bowman runs.
Oh, sorry, Jason Bowman runs. Okay.
Nope, that's fine. Yeah. And then there was, before that, there was the Oblivion Oath that Jason Bowman was running as a lunch hour game for some of his Paizo coworkers. That was a great show.
I'm thinking Knights of the Everflame for some
reason. That's also a show that Jason Bowman produced with the folks at Geek and Sundry, and pulled together a really just stellar professional cast for that. And they did two seasons of their show. It's a fantastic Pathfinder second edition story that actually builds off of the Crypt of the Everflame module. If anyone out there has played that, it's one of the classics, one of the first released for Pathfinder first edition.
I think it was the first.
Right there at the beginning. So a great module, a great one to convert on the fly to Pathfinder 2nd Edition, if someone was so interested. In fact,
in Glass Cannon, they ran that module in 2nd Edition.
They did, during the playtest. That was a fun listen to get to see. And a way for me to introduce one of my friends to Pathfinder as well, was to be able to share that with them. But Glass Cannon's one of the bigger names in Paizoverse podcasting and streaming that's out there. But it's the only one. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And then on the 5th edition side, everybody knows Critical Role. It's hard to be in this industry and not have at least heard of them, because they're just, you know, I personally don't listen to them, but they are rampantly popular.
Yeah.
So let's lead to the question. There's obviously been like a renaissance of TTRPGs. There's a lot of famous people out there who, you know, have come forward. Everywhere from people who are unrepentant nerds like Stephen Colbert to Joe Manganiello and Vin Diesel, who are the play the tough guy actors, but then also love to, you know, nerd out. And then comedies, you know, comedians like Vince Vaughn.
Yep.
How much do you think is the, well, let's say the percentage of increased popularity of because it's more available.
Yeah,
you know, it's a spotlight shown on it, and the internet makes it more available versus just the games are better.
Sure. That is a great question. I think that the popularity and influence of it, there's two things that I'm seeing. One of the things I'm seeing is that, yes, there's definitely the effect of beautiful production value shows are catching a lot of eyeballs and bringing a lot of attention to a hobby that for a long time was one that was maligned by a good part of the country, right? Like as something that right-thinking people don't participate in. Okay, thanks. Sure. I guess I'll take that badge of honor that I'm not right-thinking. That's perfectly fine by me.
No puns intended.
Right, no puns intended at all. Yeah. oh, man. I'm not going to go there. I think that a lot of this high production value stuff that's out there is definitely, it's catching a lot of eyeballs, like I said, and it's drawing a lot of attention. I mean, I think that that is one of the things that kickstarts a lot of it. And then I think people actually get into the stories and start playing them, and they get to explore the creative possibilities of a particular system, and then they'll also run into the limits of that system as well. Like they'll say, oh, D&D and Pathfinder, I mean, for as many and wonderful stories as they can create, their primary goal is combat management, tactical management. And so for a lot of players who love those games, like that's one of the things that they really, really enjoy about it. It's not to say that you can't run a social campaign or an intrigue campaign of some type with them. It's just that it's going to take a bit more work from the person who is running the game if they're going to pull something like that off.
Yeah, it's just not what the basic design of the game is for.
Right. Yeah. And so I think it's not necessarily that these games are so much better, but it's that through these games and through this through this lens that's being trained upon them, upon these highly produced shows, or not so highly produced shows, depending on who's out there. I mean, you can see any night that you log onto a service like Twitch, you're going to be able to find somebody streaming their game somewhere. And it might not have all the glitz and glamour of a Hollywood-produced style show like some of them
do. Seven professional voice actors and $1 million
budget. Yeah, sitting around a table. Yeah, exactly. Not everyone has access to those resources, and that's fine, because what you want to be doing is telling your story and sharing your story and, you know, setting the goals that you want to share there for those shows. So I think all that's to say that one of the things that having that kind of spotlight on gaming is that it's also by effect lifting up other games that exist too, that fill different roles, if you will, within tabletop role-playing. And yeah. So you can...
Fate, Powered by the Apocalypse, Dread, you know, right. Other rule systems that are going to be a little more loose let you tell a different kind of story in a different way.
Yeah. Or stories from marginalized creators that are out there, folks who the industry might not necessarily give a huge platform for to begin with, and so we want to see them get elevated too. I think and a lot of indie creators who are out there who just do not have the publishing reach that even Paizo has, much less that Wizards of the Coast has. So I think, I think you're seeing a combination of things. I think the spotlight that is lifting up a variety of games for folks to play, and I particularly really enjoy Starfinder and Pathfinder 2nd Edition as games that I play, but you know, I played an awesome one-page one as a one-shot called Lasers and Feelings one day, and the author of it is escaping me, so my apologies. I'll have to track that down later, but
I know you can find a lot of those through like Drive-Thru RPG and River Horse games and stuff like that. I know the only other game system I actively run is for my two little girls. Love My Little Pony.
And of course.
So we play the Tales of Equestria role-playing
game.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
They love it, and I love that they love it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, I think a lot of these other games are getting created. And then you've hit upon something else right there, too, is that I think a lot of parents our age or roughly or a little older, right, kids are a little bit older, are also looking at these games as opportunities for their kids to grow in their own understanding of how to create social contracts within groups, right? Like, so here in the city, there's a game store that's not too far away from here, and I think their primary business model is based on running after-school programs for kids who come in and game for hours and hours after school. Yeah, they run these programs for these kids. If the pandemic hadn't been about to hit, I was thinking about going and talking to them about some Pathfinder 2nd Edition stuff. Here we are, right? But I think that, yeah, I think that a lot of families are looking at this as an opportunity to share something about how they as families want to tell stories, and not just how I feel like I can freely say neckbeards because I'm almost one of them right now thanks to the pandemic, and I've got the ponytail to go with it too. Some folks who are only like micromanaging numbers on a chart to see if they can have the most effective battle strategy, like there's so much more to the game now than there was. And I think that that's like, it's finding an outlet in popular media stuff that and let's not discount the reach of a show like Stranger Things on Netflix. Now obviously not everyone's got a Netflix account, not everyone who does is going to watch that show, but tons of people did, and when they did, they saw these kids playing that game and said, wow, that, look at what they're able to do with that. I wonder if I could do that with my friends. And I think that that really sparks a lot of folks' imaginations.
Yeah. One of the guys I game with on a regular basis, when he watched that, he was that age at that time in history. So he was watching it and just being like, yeah, that's right. Like, that is what I was doing at that age. And that's, you know, the clothes people were wearing. And that's what that experience felt like to him.
Yeah. And I think that it wouldn't have been too far off from too much earlier than when I was growing up as well. And it's something very similar. Yeah, something very similar.
And I know there are a lot of systems out there that I would love to try.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've heard a couple podcasts run Inspectors, and like that seems like a lot of fun. Powered by the Apocalypse seems really cool.
Yep.
But I can't. You know, I can't. I just don't have time to run or play everything.
Yeah.
So one of the ways that I found is through other podcasts. You know, obviously most people are playing 5th edition or, one of the three Paizo systems.
Right.
But for you listeners, this is, you know, a shameless plug for another podcast. There's one out there called Critical Hit.
Yeah.
They've been running for 10 years at least. And I've heard them, they started off, they're primarily a 4th edition podcast. Yep. Don't give it hate, that's what was out at the time.
Yeah.
But I've heard them play Pathfinder, a Cthulhu system, Inspectors.
They're on Starfinder now, at the moment, I think.
They started a Starfinder game, and they played
Fate for a while there, where they made the comic book heroes.
Yeah. Yes, the Century City one that Brian ran, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think they played two different of the Powered by the Apocalypse versions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you can, even if you don't want to listen to the 4th edition, you can go through the feed and find other types of games that they're playing and listen to them and, you know, experience them that way. And you know, kind of be a bigger part of the community because you know a little bit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I remember finding that podcast, back in 2012. Yeah, 2011, 2012, something in that range, and just binging so many of those episodes and getting through a whole lot of that. I think I got up to like episode 150 or 200 or something like that, and then I just was like, I got so busy with work I was doing at the time, it went off to the side. I wasn't able to keep going with it. But yeah, I saw recently that they finally finished that story, that fourth edition story. And it just made me be like, maybe I do have time to go listen to this. 500 episodes. Yeah. Cause it's so interesting as a medium right now as well, because you don't see a whole lot of shows that have done an entire adventure all the way to completion yet, nor do we know how long that would take, a whole lot of podcasts to do. Right. So, I think you mentioned the Glass Cannon earlier. I mean, I think that they are coming up on probably somewhere around 300 or slightly over 300 episodes to get through one Pathfinder adventure path. I don't think a listener should necessarily expect that every podcast is going to run that long, nor, you know, should they expect that another podcast couldn't take an adventure even longer. So, yeah.
Their Starfinder one, the Androids and Aliens, and I don't have a lot of experience with Starfinder APs, mm-hmm. but they are starting book 4, and they're not even they're at episode 150.
Yeah.
So those Starfinder ones seemed a lot shorter.
They especially Dead Suns initially, that first one there only goes up, I want to say it leaves characters at level 13 at the end of the story. And one of the things that Paizo has, so for so long, Paizo has been creating these 6-volume adventure paths. It's been, it's been 10 plus years of doing that. And when Starfinder came out, they didn't do 6 months in a row of releases. They did one every other month for a year because they didn't actually know how well it was going to sell. And of course, they showed up to Gen Con and Starfinder sold out almost immediately. They had to desperately go get more copies somewhere.
They started doing the 6 and 3 and 6 and 3.
Yeah. And they've finally come back around. I think it just finished up its release, the Devastation Arc, 3-volume adventure path, where you can take characters from level 13 to level 20, I believe, in Starfinder. And so, yeah, it's interesting. It definitely runs a little bit faster there. But there are a few, more than a few podcasts out there right now that have run Dead Suns all the way through in about the same number of episodes, maybe even a few fewer. Not a whole lot of whole Paizo adventure paths Pathfinder adventure paths out there just yet. Those tend to, the six books of Pathfinder is a whole lot of Pathfinder.
We've been talking about, we're approaching the end of book 1,
right?
And taking a bit of a break and releasing some other probably society scenarios or stuff like that. Nice. Just to kind of mix things up, because I love to play. But mm-hmm. I also love to not be stuck watching the same... It's like trying to watch all of the Lord of the Rings through in one setting in the extended cut. After a little while, you're like, you know what? I'm gonna watch Star Wars. Just one Star Wars, just to kind of mix this up a bit, because this is a lot, and I could use a break.
Yeah. You'd go for a walk for 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. Yeah. Well, what a great book 1 you guys picked, though. I think of all the Paizo adventure paths that I've read, the first book of Serpent Skull is probably one of my favorites. I don't know that everyone would agree with me on that, but I feel like as a starting adventure, it could almost stand on its own as just a module that someone could complete and then go run whatever adventure they wanted to after that if they didn't want to do the rest of the books.
I agree with that. That is a thing. It is a very self-contained thing that brings everybody together. And one of the things I talked about with James Schwartz was he starts a lot of his APs off at a higher level because it doesn't make sense in most adventure paths for, the town that's in danger to be like, hey, you greenhorns, first level. You got a town full of NPCs that are 3, 4, 5th level. Why are you sending these guys?
Right.
But it was Serpent Skull. It's a shipwreck. You don't really have a lot of choice. Here you are.
Here you are. Yep. Don't get eaten by the snakes. Yeah.
Or the everything else on the island.
Everything
like,
else.
On like the people. Don't get eaten by the
cannibals. That's true. Don't get eaten by the people. That's true.
So, we've had a great talk. Mm-hmm. Any closing thoughts on your end, Jason?
I hope that all of the folks listening can find the stories that they are most interested in hearing in a way that's told that helps them feel welcome into a part of a broader community that also loves this hobby the same way that you do, right? Yeah. So that we can together keep building and creating and drawing upon each other's experiences so that we can help each other tell the best stories and experience the best stories we can. Because I cannot think of too many other ways that we as humans go about becoming better humans than listening to each other's stories and sharing in and participating in them with each other. So that's what empathy, I hope we can do.
Empathy breeds compassion.
Yeah, right? Let's make that happen. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I know one of my favorite things is when I hear from a listener. Like when we get a message from somebody who's like, the other day, we were making jokes about elephant enemas. Okay. Yeah, don't ask, it just happened, right?
I'm sure they have to exist, yeah, probably.
Well, I mean, they do. You can see them. And I got contacted by a listener who was like, I worked as a zookeeper for 5 years, and everything you said is entirely accurate. And I was just like, okay, yeah.
There we go, yeah.
Cool. So, I mean, like, having that connection, I had no idea that this person was a listener. Then he's just like, hey, I got you, fam. And I was just like, there it is. There's another connection, another bridge. This is another one of those patented awkward endings where I try to segue into a sign-off, and I'm just going to say thank you very much, all of our listeners, all of the bashers out there.
Yeah.
Please, if you find the What Do You Do podcast, What Do You Do Twitter feed, give it a follow and a like and retweets and everything, because he is doing the Lord's work for all of us little Paizoverse ones and some of the bigger Paizoverse ones.
Thanks. Yeah. The Twitter handle is at What Do You Do Pods, PODS at the end. And if you are looking for a way to find your next favorite adventure being run by a group that's out there having fun with it, I would love to help connect you to that adventure. So
only rule is, there's two rules. One, you have to be nice.
Yes.
Two, you can't substitute another podcast for Shield Bash. You have to continue listening to Shield Bash.
Please do. Yeah.
Add to that.
Please do.
Just remember that.
Expand the groups that you're listening to, because there's an awesome community that's out there, and we want to help support each other. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, listeners, and we will see you next time.
Awesome. Bye-bye.
Shield Bash is made in association with Knights of the Octagon and Farmageddon Gaming Convention. Find us online at shieldbash.net, on Facebook at Shield Bash, on Twitter at Bash Shield, and on YouTube at Shield Bash. Music by Lee Rosevere. Serpent Skull and Pathfinder are the property of Paizo Publishing Incorporated. Leave a comment on iTunes for a chance to hear us read it out on the podcast. Questions and comments can be sent to shieldbashpodcast@gmail.com.